batteries, but I personally am at the same risk, so it's not a problem. Okay. If you remember last time, we started the Be'er HaMishi, the fifth section here of the Be'er HaGoyla. And the fifth section was again about statements of Chazal Nagoros that are surprising, but not surprising like those in the fourth section, where you're just surprised, for instance, to hear a description of Hashem crying, but surprising in the sense that it sounds like one of those weird dreams that you have in the middle of the night that just doesn't make sense on any level. And those are now the ones which are really, really encoded and encrypted that he wanted to explain. And last time we spent the first time basically talking about, explaining his introduction, where he again spoke about attitudes towards Divrei Chachamim and appreciating and understanding that there's more to they say than meets the eye. But the last section of his introduction, the last component of his introduction, he spoke about the Mishnah in Chagiga, where the Mishnah says that about Arayis you don't teach with three people, about Masa Bereshis, Arayis, which is forbidden relationships, about Bereshis you don't teach with two, and about Merkava you don't even teach with one. And he explained magnificently that those three areas of learning that we speak about, that one has to be careful in approaching, that the way they are divided up is as follows. Arayus is two people who are not allowed to marry each other. Arayus is about studying the relationship of components that exist within the world. That's one aspect. When one is looking, of course, at the deeper level, not simply just, this is what the pasuk says, this one can't marry this one can't marry that one, but the interplay, the relationship, the codependence and so on and so forth between different elements that exist in the world, that is the study of Arayus. The next level is the study of Hashem's relationship to the world, which is Bereshis, when Hashem said, let there be a world. And that's Hashem's, the study of Bereshis is the study of how Hashem relates to the world that he created, which is more profound. It's going a step beyond just studying the relationship of items on the world, but studying the relationship of Hashem to the world. Merkava, the beginning of Yecheskel, which is the study of the chariot of Hashem in the heavens, that's the study of Hashem where he is, so to speak, not Hashem's relationship to the world. That's even more profound. That's a step beyond. That is even more reserved and even more careful. So what he's going to be talking about here, he was talking about in a certain sense you could take it as an introduction about the care and the caution, which is taken in studying the behind the scenes, so to speak, aspects of Bria, of creation. However, what he's going to be talking about here is really the example which he's going to be talking about is an example that's really going to speak of the first variety, which is what he would refer in the general category to as Arayus, forbidden relationships. And that means, again, in his formulation, the relationship of various items and how they exist within the world. And now, let's... always an optimist. Let's take a look at the passage of Agadata, which he's going to be analyzing in this spirit. Okay, and I think I might have read it to you briefly last time, but now we'll have it really here. This is for real. This Agadata comes from the Agadatas of Rabbi Bar Bar Chana, various visions of Rabbi Bar Bar Chana that are described in the fifth parak of Bava Basra, and are known as some of the most outstandingly difficult and challenging Agadatas to learn. So boys, we've made it. Okay. This is very, very unusual. Okay. Says the Gemara. V'yamar Rabba Bar Bar Chana, v'didi chazili, hahi akrukta. I observed an akrukta. What's an akrukta? An akrukta is, of course, something which crooks. Croaks. It's a frog. Akrukta is a frog. Isa and Akrukta. I imagine that might be where it got its name from. Isa, a frog. Dehavia ki Akra de Hagrunya. That was the size of Akra in Hagrunya, which was a certain town. It was the size of a village. It was a frog the size of a village. How big was that village? Akra de Hagrunya kamaavia shitin bati. It was a village of 60 homes. Okay, it doesn't say whether they were townhomes or detached homes, but it was a village. It was a nice size. It was a frog the size of a little village. Asa tanina bala, and then along came a tanina. What's a tanina? Tanina is a snake, and swallowed it up.
A crocodile, tanina,
a reptile. Asa pushkansa. And then a pushkansa came along. What's a pushkansa? Is a raven, a female raven, came along, ubalulatanina, and swallowed the snake. Right? Sounds like Chadgadya, right? Visolik yosir bilana. And it went up and it sat in a tree. Tochazi kamanafish cheli bilana. Must have been some tree, right? If it can hold a raven that swallowed a snake, that swallowed a frog that was the size of a village, it must have been quite a tree. Rapa Bar Shmuel said, if I hadn't been there, I wouldn't believe it. But I was there, so I believed it. That's what he says. Okay. Now you see what I mean by the introduction? Okay. Okay? Sounds very, very, very strange. What on earth does it mean? Now remember again, this is the same Rabbi Bar Chana who taught us all of these very, very strong analytical teachings throughout the Gemara. Rabbi Chana is a very, very significant Amora, and here he's telling us these fairy tales, and he expects us to swallow them whole, pun intended. So the question is, what on earth are we to make of this kind of a thing? Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech Haolam shehakol nehiyah bedvarim. So I hope you guys have some ideas, because I haven't got a clue. Okay. One day, Yetz Hashem, maybe, I'm not sure if we'll do it this way, but maybe even next time, we'll do an exercise, because there's a little sefer called the Pirush Al Kama Agodes Chazal from the Gra, from the Vilna Gaon, where he discusses some agodes. He's not there to do what the Maharal is doing. He's just explaining some of the agodes, and a lot of his focus, one of the main sections, is a short sefer, is on the Agodas of Rabbi Bar Bar Chana, which the Maharal is only going to touch two. In fact, Rabbi Feldman, the Rosh Hashiva, I think we mentioned this last time, Rabbi Feldman wrote a book in English about these. The Gra's explanation of this Gemara could hardly be more different than the Maharal's. I mean, they share virtually nothing in common. They're like, it's an agoda which is satum v'chatum, it's closed and sealed, right? You know, frogs, snakes, you know, like you can go almost anywhere, it would seem, which makes it very, very interesting. So the Maharal learns one way and the Gra learns a completely different way. What we're focusing on here, at least today, is the approach of the Maharal. So the Maharal begins and he says as follows. I'm starting where he gets down to business. His introductory comments also, of course, are, when they hear a statement like that, they think a bad thought. They think that it's ridiculous stuff. But he says, as crazy as they think it is, it's as deep as it is. In other words, obviously, there's much more to this than what meets the eye. So what is there to this? So the Maharal begins and he says, "B'mashe derech hachamim lasek b'tzir ha'olam uv'sidur shalai, eichi sidurei v'kishurei zeh im zeh, al sh'olam u'kushar m'sudar yachad." He says, the way of the Chachamim is to try to understand the interplay, the relationships of the elements that exist within this world, ad shu echad, till they see it as really being part of one unified whole. Now this introduction, which is really, as he's going to explain, the way he sees this agada is as an illustration of this study of the relationship of elements within the world, which is, again, according to what he explained in the introduction, what we call the limud ba'arayis, darshim ba'arayis, teaching about arayis. Arayis is about forbidden relationships, but he said that that's the part of studying the hidden secrets of the relationship of elements and items within the creation. And so he sees this b'raisa, or not this b'raisa, but this agadata rather, as exhibit A of studying the relationship of items and elements that exist within the world. Okay, so where do we go from here? So a few steps, a couple of steps he's going to take us with. The first step that he's going to take us with is to note that everything that we're speaking about here in the Gemara is treif, in colloquially. Frogs, snakes, ravens, they're all of the non-kosher variety. Trees are kosher. But the frogs, the snakes and the ravens, they're all not kosher. And when you're dealing with something which is not kosher, something which we are not supposed to partake of within the world, so there we have the most natural assumption to say that somehow that's not from God. If it was good, if it was from God, it would be good. If it was from God, it would be tar, it would be pure. And therefore, it would be something that we would be able to indeed partake of. The fact that it is usher, the fact that it is forbidden, that the fact that it's not supposed to be there, so then how could it exist? How could it be from the pure source? But in fact, you know, we have a pasuk which says the opposite. The pasuk says, "Mi'itain tahor mitame lo yachad." The pasuk in Iyov, in the book of Iyov, says, "Who makes it that tahor comes from tame? That something which is impure can produce something which is tahor, something which is pure, and vice versa." Right? The shichlazera, the seed which is used to create a child, right, is tame, right? The shechvazer, the seminal discharge which comes from a man, is tame, but yet it produces a person who's going to be tahor. And therefore, there's an idea, as we say, when we say Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, Hashem is our God, Hashem is the one and only, and we speak about a time when we will be able to have the vision to see that Hashem Echad is whether the bad or the good, right? The coming world is not like this world. In this world, good things, you have one reaction. Bad things, you have a very, very different reaction. Sanction, right? The bracha of Hatayva Ameitiv for good things. Dayan Emes, we accept Hashem's true judgment for bad things. Two different reactions to two different kinds of events, two different kinds of things which happen. However, we say Hashem Echad, that in the world to come, in the world to come, it'll be the opposite. We're going to say that in the world to come, we're going to say that we're going to have the same bracha on both, and we unify everything. And when we say in the Shema right after Hashem Echad, V'yahavtas Hashem Elokecha b'chol levavcha, you should love Hashem your God with all of your heart. We say, what does that mean with all of your heart? It's like a double heart, levav, not b'chol libcha, but levavcha, two vases, with the Yetzer Hara and the Yetzer HaTov. And there's a notion of being able to unify everything, that which seems close and that which seems far, and to put it into one package and to bond it together and to see it as an integral and an original unity. And therefore, we say here as well, Mi'itain tahor mitame lo yachad. He says there's a temptation in a certain sense to see that this must be something from outside, not from Hashem. And of course, there's a difference between tahor and tame. There's something which is going to be more completely imbued with the visible presence of Hashem, and something which Hashem chose to pull back from when in the tummy. But it's not from a different source. It's from room which Hashem left for it. And therefore, ultimately, it's going to be Echad. And just to understand, because he's going to, the second piece of understanding is going to go far afield before he comes back to this, says that's going to be ultimately the idea of saying that it all rested on one tree. The Gemara says in the end, remember, so the frog got swallowed by the snake, got swallowed by the raven, and it was sitting on the branch of the tree. Imagine the strength of the tree. And the idea is, what he's saying is, that a tree is something which by nature branches out in all different directions. It starts, right, there's the trunk, there's the core, but then it branches out in so many different directions. And indeed, over here as well, we're seeing a manifestation of the many different directions in which Bria branches and spreads itself out, in which creation branches and spreads itself out. But it's all Nitlav Ashiravi. It's all dependent on the one source, on the one big tree, on the one big base from which it all will grow out. That's the idea that he's trying to speak about here, the unity that exists within the Bria. And even those things which again would be seemingly off the charts, separate from the world, that would be out. But what's this idea of frogs as big as villages? What's the idea of snakes swallowing frogs, ravens swallowing snakes, swallowing frogs? So let's start with frogs and snakes and ravens. In the world, we have a view of the world which ended up not only being ours but being shared as well by the medieval philosophers, that there are arba yisaidis, that there are four core elements that exist within the world, within this world. One of them is afar, dust. Another one is water, mayim. Another one is esh, fire. And the fourth one is ruach. Ruach means the spirit. Afar, mayim, esh, and ruach. Afar is like the solid materials, mayim is the liquid materials, esh is the fire, whatever that is, that energy, the light, and ruach is the air. The Ramban writes about this, for instance, in the first psukim of the Torah. Right? When Hashem originally created the Shemayim v'Oretz, the heavens and the earth, the Oretz was Sayu v'Avayu, was empty and void. The Choshech al Pnei Sayim, there was darkness on the face of the deep waters, with a Ruach Elokim Merachefes al Pnei Amoyim. So what do you have? Choshech, darkness, as a reality, as a tangible reality, is there's fire and darkness, right? It's part of the fire, right? And then it's choshech. The darkness was on top of the waters, which of course are on top of the seabed, which is the earth. So you have the fire, the water, the earth, and then the pasuk says, and the spirit of Elohim hovered over all of that. So there you have it: ruach, esh, mayim, afar. Those are the four elements that go into the matter, so to speak, of this physical world. Okay, that's there. That's a given. Now, when you consider it, you can consider that you have you start off with the frog. The frog is a creature of the water. The nachash, the snake, swallows the frog. What's the snake?
Oh.
Mm. I knew you would say that. The snake is fire. Why is the snake fire?
Venom.
So you say, oh, big deal, venom. Okay, venom. The nachash is called in the Torah a seraph, right? A seluch saraf, right? It's called a seraph. Seraph means fire, right? A fiery thing. It's viewed that way. That the nachash, you know, nachashim asrafim, right? The nachash is considered to be miyisod ha'esh, from the foundational element of the fire. And then you have the raven, which is it flies in the air, so it resides there, and it's going to be considered to be of the air. So you have these three elements. One would of course be tempted to say, and the fourth element would be the tree, which is from the offer. But the Maharal doesn't say that. He says you have these three elements. You have all three of them. And in a sense, like we just showed, if you followed it before, you have the dust, the seabed, you have the water above that, you have the fire, choshech al pnei sahom, the fire, the darkness, which is the fire, and then you have the ruach over the esh. So if you would consider it, you would say, let's leave out the bottom, the earth, which is why the Maharal doesn't understand the tree that way. Like, the earth he considers to be the foundation, it's sort of not even coming into the cheshbon. It's the foundation through which the items that are upon this earth have to interplay. What you have is first the frog from the water, then you have the snake from the fire, and then you have the raven from the air. So these three things are swallowing up one and the other. So you see where he's going, which is that he's talking about, again, this interplay, this relationship between the various yesodos, the various elements that exist within the world. You have something of each element, of each type of thing that exists within the world. Okay, so that's piece number two in the analysis of this Haggadah. You understand? You see, this is like a complicated structure. And you see, by the way, also that, oh gosh, I never would have seen that in this. I never would have seen this in the Gemara. And maybe somebody could interpret it differently. You'll say, like I mentioned last time, the Gra is going to interpret this Agarita, like completely, completely different. In his formulation, frogs are remes to Talmidei Chachamim, Torah scholars. Okay?
Different.
I would prefer Prince Charming myself, but but nevertheless, right? That's how he says it, because a metaphor based on Yetzias Mitzrayim, a whole different story. But the Maharal is understanding it in this way, and he's offering this analysis. And you know, even in the world of Agarita, and even in Tarshish Baal Peh, sometimes you have these kinds of multiple interpretations to which we would give them all some level of the credibility. Okay. Okay. So I want to read this a little bit inside, to so we'll follow. V'chelkei ha'metzius hem gimel. This is on page Chaf Aleph. For those who wish to follow inside, page Chaf Aleph. V'chelkei ha'metzius hem gimel. The portions of metzius are three. Yesh mesiaches l'mayim. Excuse me for 1 second. I'm sorry. Okay, sorry about that. Let's start again. Okay, so again, we're learning here about frogs, snakes, ravens and trees, and for those who came late, that probably sounds especially interesting. So the chelkei ha'metzius hem gimel. The portions of the existence are three. Yesh misyaches l'mayim, yesh misyaches l'esh. There's those who are misyaches that are related to water, those related to fire, and those related to air. Those are the three yesodos, which are called osham, the sefer yitzira, and the book of yitzira, sefer yitzira, which is considered miyuchas, traced to Avram Avinu, so they it speaks very, very much about the book of creation, speaks about the elements of the world, and it's Aleph Shin Mem is Avir, is the Aleph, Shin is Eish, right, also starts with an Aleph, but they go by the second letter, and Mem is Mayim, and they are the yesodos, they are the foundations from which everything else is formed. And they're called, even in the Sefer Yetzirah, which is the basis for the Maharal's saying that it's going to be just those three that we're talking about, and not the foundational one of Ofer of Dust. We don't have something there. Those three are considered to be a league above, beyond the Ofer of the Dust, which is all the way on the bottom of the pile, and does not connect, does not interplay in the same way with these that are considered to be a level higher. Right? Hashem didn't split up the earth and divide it in two and put half of it above the firmament and half of it below. It's only the water. The water is considered to be above. The earth is only earth. It's all the way on the bottom. It doesn't cycle. It doesn't have a precipitation cycle where it goes up and down. And obviously the water, the air, and the fire are also more heavenly, are also drawn up to a different level. So Aleph Shin Mem, Rosh Tevos, with their starting with Osham, those are above and beyond in their own league. So here again, the way he's saying it is that we have of these non-kosher varieties, which all of these things that are listed in this Agarata are, the frog, the snake, the raven. We have here a frog, which is a non-kosher variety, which is residing in the water. There's a non-kosher variety that's related to fire, which is the snake, which is a serif. As we said, it's a seraph. It burns with its venom, and therefore it's considered related to fire. And there's one which relates to the air, which is the orev, the raven, which flies around in the air. Now again, these things are to some degree off-center. They're separate from the mitzios because they're not the main thing. If they were the main thing, they would be kosher. They would be that which we were supposed to use in the world. They're separate from them. They're tameim. They're not kosher. So the seder of them is, again, following this order, and we're trying to see how they still all rest on the one tree. That the one upon the other, that they all rest on the one tree. Okay. So, a beginning of something. Now, why on earth, however, is this frog as big as a small town? Why is this as big as Acre de Hagrunia? Why is that the vision which he has over here? So, says the Maharal, he says, start off, let's look at this, 60 houses. So 60, the number 60, you know, the Maharal, one of his major areas, which we've touched upon several times, you know, glancingly here in the Be'er HaGola, which he talks about extensively in all of his writings, is the numerology, is the significance of the numbers which are used. And one thing which you know, in Chazal, in Agadata, when Chazal speak in Agadata, and they describe things, so very, very often they'll say, oh, and it was 300, 700, whatever it is, all the different numbers which they use to describe something. And these are, by and large, Lishonos Shel Guzma, these are, by and large, sort of exaggerated terms. In other words, like this whole thing, this whole story, what he says that he saw, right, is not literally that he was actually sitting here one day and he saw this huge, you know, frog, you know, hopping along. It's a vision which he uses to describe something, just like, again, our CIA agent Lahavdil, who's going to describe something in code that he saw that was not actually physically seen. So when you start giving, however, specific dimensions to it, it gets a little bit more difficult to understand. If you're using a metaphor anyway, why using these specific dimensions? So the numbers which are used are always numbers which have some significant symbolism to them. So let me throw it out to you. 60. Excellent. Batel b'shishim. In halacha, we have a principle where if you have something which is, let's say, a non-kosher item that gets mixed into a kosher item, or if you have, let's say, a cholent, right, and you're cooking your cholent and you open a carton of milk, right, you know, right, and a little bit from the carton of milk sprays out and lands at the cholent, right, and you can't identify it, right, or whatever, you're able to scoop off a drop, but you know some of it got mixed in. So what's going to be the shear? What's going to be the measure where we say you have to consider it or you don't have to consider it? So the general rule is that we use a measure of batel b'shishim. If there are 60 parts of A to one part of B, so then it's going to be batel. It's not going to count. It's not going to be significant. So 60, in that sense, is a number which overwhelms, which represents such a wholeness, such a strength, that anything else which would come along would sort of just fall into it, would be absorbed within it. It's a term of power. There's another place where we use shishim, which is very, very famous. Okay, other good example. That wasn't the one I was referring to, but it's a very, very good example. If we speak about things which are 1/60th of death, right? So certain things could be with shina, sleep, is 1/60th of death. A person who visits a sick person takes away 1/60th, right, of his illness, right? 1/60th, right, which is a little bit, you know, less than shishim, a little bit less than shishim is, right, the whole is 60, the whole is 60, and when you're seen as sort of like attacking the whole, taking away the whole, or just having a smidgen of it, something small but meaningful, right? You're going to speak about it that way as being 1/160th. Again, 1 against 60 is going to be insignificant to the whole. The 60 is the whole. The 60th is something. We speak about
Shishim
Giberim Saviv Lami Giberi Yisrael. It's another example of Pasuk, right? Shishim Ribo. Right? 60 multitudes. What are the 60 multitudes? 600,000 Jews were referred to as Shishim Ribo. Right? A multitude is 10,000. 60 multitudes. Sort of, again, like a totality. Like that's the description of the totality of the Jewish people. So the Shishim is a number for a term for what the Maral calls Mispar Sholem Kloli, which means a whole number that's Kloli, that again represents the whole. I mean, it's Sholem Kloli, a number which is used to represent the whole. And that's why we speak about being Batel B'Shishim and so on and so forth. Yeah.
So didn't numerology also borrow that? Because that's why there's 60 minutes in an hour in a circle, and 60 and circles are 360. That's like also a mathematical.
Right. Good. Excellent. Excellent. So he says. So what's the now? Just as a parenthetical thing, Maral will say in a second, to explain why the number 60 is a Mizrach Shalom Koli Ein Zemekhaim is not its place. What does he say? So Rabbi Hartman brings many Maramakhaimis, but this is this is the kind of thing which Maral speaks about indeed in many, many different places. He says that the number 6 represents the full dimensions of the world, three dimensions, because you have the two polar opposites of each thing, and we have three dimensions with two ends. So you have six, right? When you shake the lulav, right? You shake the lulav in six directions, right? East, west, north, south, up and down, right? That's in the full box. That's the six, the full dimensions, and 10, right? 10 is also a mispar of shlemus, also a number of completeness, right? That's that we use the decimal system. That's the natural system of counting things whole. So that's some of it. I mean, there's more to it than that, but that's some of what it is that we speak about. This.
Isn't 40 also a wholeness?
Yes. Yeah. That this is one of the things one has to always understand in the Maral, and I don't understand it well when he uses it. But the Maral often speaks about this world being four dimensions, right? That's why this world was created with a dalet, right? It was created with a hey, actually, a dalet and a yud, right? But we say dalet represents the four dimensions, right? East, west, north, south, right? But that doesn't represent the other one. So sometimes you speak about four, and sometimes you speak about six, right? You have the 6 days of the week, right, which is the physical world, and then you have the seventh day, which is the center, the element of holiness. What?
Would it be time? So your place or your dimensions in time is putting it into perspective.
It's a fourth dimension, right?
He's saying in terms of the spatial dimension.
Yeah. He's speaking even within. So to me, it's not clear. I don't have a handle on when we use the four and when we use the six. But here we're using the six. We're using the six graduated into 60. And what he says is like this. So you say it was Gadok Me'akredi Tavgina Shishim Batim is again to represent this sort of, completeness. The rights of Leimar, Shein Zeh K'may Shar Mispar Shishim, Keitzel Mispar Shishim, Chorach M'chulak L'atzmei, excuse me. But then he says, so again, it's representing this sort of a wholeness, that this was this frog, it's not just a little frog, right? But it's was Gadol K'may Akra De'agrinya, which encompasses the whole species, or that whole area, that whole element of Mayim, of water. And he says, beautifully, this says the Maral, but don't say, so then they should say, I saw a frog that was as big as 60 houses. He doesn't say that. He says, I saw a frog that was as big as Akra de Hagrunya, which is a town that you want to know how big it is, it has 60 houses in that town. He says, because if we would have said it was as big as 60 houses, it's sort of like a bunch of different pieces. And when we speak of the area, then we speak about it as a whole. So therefore we say it was like this area, which is a whole, and the dimensions of the whole was the 60 houses, which again represents the wholeness and the completion. Okay. So we have this. The obviously the snake is that big, right, because it swallows up the frog, and obviously the bird is going to be that big because it swallows up the snake that swallowed up the frog. So we're speaking about all of these different elements of the Bria, all of these different elements of the world that are all Tameim. They're all not not kosher. They all would to some degree be elements that would be again on the periphery, on the outside of the Bria, on every level of that Bria. But then he saw it come and sit in the tree. And here he speaks out what we spoke about earlier. Pirushinian said, Da. Ki olam azeh dome alilonecha. This world is like a tree. Shenimshach min ha'ikar at seifa ilon. It starts at its roots and it extends through all the branches, all the way to their tips, to their leaves. V'yeshu anofim harbe nimshachim zachar. It has many branches, one extending from the other. And so is the world. Shenimshach min asiba harishoina v'hu ha'ikar. It starts from its core, from its root, which is HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that we refer to as the root, right? What do we refer to on Pesach and the Haggadah when we speak about the evil son who denies everything? He's called the Kofer, the Ikar, right? He denies the Ikar. What's the Ikar? He denies the root of all things, the creation, the root of all creation, the Ribbono Shel Olam. But from those roots, things grow and grow and grow and extend all different aspects of the Metzius, all different aspects of the world. V'yesh od mitzius mishtalsheles v'im eina me'etzem ha'olam aval eim nitfalim nimshachim el ha'olam shu ha'mitzius ba'atzmo v'ze ba'avur pechisusam l'chach einam ikar ha'olam. And he says, yes, these things which are tamei, they're not the highest things, they're not the best things, they're not the mainstays of the world. They sit perhaps on some branch, they're extended there to some branch. The main stuff is the stuff that's front and center, that's Torah, the stuff that we're supposed to use. But because they grow one from the other, there's always something which is more central, closer to the core, closer to the center, the Siba Rishayna, that will carry everything else. That will carry everything else. And that's going to be the development that that exists between the Bria. And he goes on to speak about this, about how things develop and you have something closer to the source, further from the source. But when we see all of these things, the creation of water, which is, and then the snake, which is stronger because it's closer to the Metzius, because it's the higher level, and then the bird which flies, which is going to be on that, it all, in some sense, comes together. This is what he explains, and he goes on to speak about it more. And he himself at the end says, you know, I don't know about this. This is like really, I don't know if I should reveal this. I've only revealed part. I don't think it's so understandable, and so on and so forth. So let's try to make something of this, right? Because I look at you, and I think we need to. okay. The Maral, really, if we speak about dimensions, right, we are indeed speaking about these two. The Maral is really speaking here on two dimensions when we're dealing here with this structure of the elements of the world. Again, this is what he calls Darshim Baharai, is figuring out the relationship of things that exist within the world. And there is this sort of a vertical axis, which is starting with the offer on the bottom, the dust on the bottom, the water above that, the fire above that, and the air above that. Those are the four elements, as we said again. Look at the Ramban in the beginning of the Chumash, right? The Oyot HaYisasahu Vavo, the Choshech, the darkness, which corresponds to the fire, Al Pnei Sahom, on the face of the deep waters, which are over the earth, with the Ruach Elokim, with the Ruach on top of it all. Those are the four elements. That's excuse me, I'm sorry. Child who's traveling, I have to answer. Yes, hello? Yeah. Oh, Gewaldic. Okay, wonderful. I'm relieved. Okay. Okay, they'll probably tell you much closer to the time, but you could ask somebody. Yeah, they usually do that much closer to the actual departure. Okay, Hatzlacha. I'm very glad. Yeah, so that's the vertical. That's the vertical structure of these various elements which exist within the world. But then there's also this thing that he's speaking about, these two tracks of, you know, side by side. Because in everything that exists in the world, you're going to have the good parts, the Torah parts, the kosher parts, the parts which are pure and good and mainstay and usable. And then you're going to have the secondary. You're going to have the stuff which is to the side, which is not as good and not as usable and not as central to the world. The Tahira and the Einena Tahira. And the kunst, the trick here, as the Maharal is saying it is, that we're going to have to see that each thing has a zeh u'mazeh, right? This is a principle which we talked about, if you remember, when we learned about kishuf, about the notions of sorcery, which is sort of a spiritual exercise that comes not from a pure source, which is that something that the Torah forbids. But we understand that everything in the world, we have these two like sort of parallel tracks, parallel branches. You have the Torah, the kosher, and you have the non-Torah, the osur, the forbidden, the non-pure, the impure on the other side. And the question is, when you look at these parallel tracks, are they completely separate from each other? So on the one hand, we have these four elements that exist within the world and their separation from each other. And on the other hand, we have as well two parallel tracks and their separation from each other. And basically, what this Agada is doing is it's saying that all four of these elements feed into each other on this side, linearly, and then they all come back to the roots of the same tree, which also is a unifying factor. And the ultimate goal, as he said in the beginning, is Echad, to see the unity of all the components within the world, and to see them all as coming from one place, and therefore all ultimately coming back to the same place. Let me try to explain this a little bit more. When we speak about four elements within the world, so there's another, at the risk of confusing the matter, there's another place where we speak about four elements or four stages within the world, which we've also touched upon before. And what's that? Domeim, Someach, Chai, Medaber. The domeim is the inanimate, the earth itself, the minerals, the elements, which would include, for the record, dust and water, and probably in many cases fire as well, and air. Domeim, the inanimate, the stuff which is just there, it doesn't grow, it doesn't change. Someach are the plants that grow and that change. Chai is what the Rishonim refer to as the Nefesh HaTnua. Alive, plants are also alive, but things with a life force that allows them to move, right? Plants don't move. I mean, they grow in place. But horses, donkeys, ants, fish, right? These are all Nefesh HaTnua. These are life forces that are not only alive and growing, unlike the inanimate and unlike the plants, but they also move around. And then you have Medaber, the speaking being, man, that also, like the animals, grows. You know, it's not just the matter; it's also growing and it's also moving. But it also has this higher force, whether you identify it with the power of speech, as they did. You speak about the soul, the intellect, whatever you want to call, but it's a class of itself above and beyond the others. Domein Someach Chai Medaber. How do these four things interplay? So, we may have touched upon this some time ago, but there's this beautiful, beautiful concept which we have, which is very, very much, when you think about it, going to be reflecting the kind of dynamic that this Agadita is describing according to the Maharal. What's that? The Ramban writes in the Geres HaKodesh, if the Ramban wrote it, right? It's a question whether he wrote it, but it was written by somebody important, mm-hmm. right? And the same idea is found in many other places, including in the Tanya and others, that, you know, they ask, speak about the idea that we're not vegetarians, right? We who are compassionate to animals, right? We have a mandate in the Torah, or at least according to the Rabbanan, of Tzar Balei Chaim, of actively, you know, being careful about pain to animals, to living things. What do we say? We eat the animals, right? So what happened to the compassion? So the Ramban explains that indeed it's the height of compassion. Why? Because what was this animal going to be? And all it was going to be was a dumb horse. All it was going to be was a cow. What HaKadosh Baruch Hu did in his world was, he said, look, Domeim, I created this earth. What is it going to be? It's just going to be a clump of earth? But what happens is, plants grow out of the earth. Right? Water goes into the plants. And when the plants grow out of the earth, and the earth puts its minerals and its guts into the plant, what happens is that the earth grows beyond just being earth. It becomes higher, it goes into a plant. And then along comes the cow, and, you know, lumbers along, bends down and munches the plant. So now the plant, instead of just being stuck as just being a plant, now gets swallowed up. Yeah, so it loses its independence, right? And it's no longer a nice, beautiful, flourishing plant, and it gets broken down, digested, right? We are not going to describe it much more vividly than that, right? So you say, oh, that's terrible. But on the other hand, by doing that, it now becomes part of something on the next rung of the ladder of creation. It's risen up a level. And that's the same thing what we do when we eat an animal. We eat the animal and it becomes part of the medaber, part of the human being. Because of the fact that the relationship between man and beast has a certain fluidity to it. Remember what happened when Cain killed Hevel? So he was worried about the animals, because before that the animals were afraid of the people. Because a human being is an animal with a soul, and if the soul is going to be used, so then he's above and beyond. If the soul is not going to be used, so then he becomes lower than the behemoth. That's a concept which Chazal tell us constantly. At the time of Noach, where because of the righteousness of Noach, the world was saved and the animals were saved by Noach bringing them into the Teva and so on and so forth, so there it sort of became on some level locked in. And there, what happens after the Teva? It's not just that we say, Noach, go ahead, eat the animals. It also says, "Umorachem v'chitchem yeal kol chayes hasada," that the animals will now always be afraid of you. Instead of it being something fluid, dependent on your behavior, they will be always afraid of you. It somehow became now a locked hierarchy. So then we were allowed to eat the animals. But the idea is that we're going up level to level. And that has a couple of elements to it. First of all, it has this element of this sort of like ascendancy within it. And it also has this very, very important element of unity. That ultimately, everything can become part of one whole. And when we speak about this idea of a hierarchy of a hierarchy of creation, then we have the idea of kol ha'ilam kulay, kedai hulay. All of the world was worthy for this one person. There's a mission in Pirkei Avos, in the beginning of the fifth parak of Pirkei Avos, the first mission in the fifth parak of Pirkei Avos, which says, Basoram amores nivra ha'ilam. The world was created with 10 statements. Again, I certainly have shared it with some of you before. I don't know if I shared it in this shiur. So, but anyway, it's words. It's an idea which I think is very worthy of chazara, of review. The world was created with 10 statements, says the Mishnah. Right? We know Bereishis, 6 days of creation. Let there be light. Let there be this. Let there be that. Says the Mishnah, I don't understand. Hashem needed 10 statements to create the world. Why didn't he just say, let there be a world? Yihi Olam, right? Let there be a world. And it'll all come at once. Rather, says the Mishnah, what was the reason why Hashem did it? Because he wanted to give reward to the righteous who uphold the world that was created with 10 statements. He wanted to punish the evil who destroy the world that was created with 10 statements. Right? So it's very enigmatic. What does that mean? Right? So it's going to be a greater reward because the whole world was created with 10 statements instead of with one. But it could have been created with one. Right. So, right. The example we give, which is not ours, it's found in the Mefarshim. I don't remember if it's the Chassid Yaivitz or the Maral. They ask they pose a question. They say, "What's going on? If you go into a store and you buy a Bic pen, right, and you insist on paying $5, it's still a 29-cent pen. And if somebody steals it from you or borrows it from you and doesn't give it back, they only owe you 29 cents. So if Hashem could have created the world with one statement, so he created it with 10, now the reward is greater or the punishment is greater, what difference does it make? That's what it is. And the way we explain this is as follows, again, based on Kadmonenu. That the 10 statements is not to say, oh, Hashem invested more into the world. But the 10 statements made the world into a progression. And if you open up a Chumash and you look at Maase Bereishis, that's what you see. You see a progression. The world is developing from step to step to step to the climax, to the top of the pyramid, which is the last creation, man. And what that does is, as the verse itself says, when Hashem creates man, he says, and now, everything which I created till now is for you. It's like, if you would walk into a building, you know, in and out during the day, and you come in the morning and they're mopping the floors, and then you come in later and they're setting a table. And you come in later and you smell food coming from the kitchen. Right? And finally you come at night and you see two people walk in to the building and sit down, walk across the shiny floor, sit down at the beautifully set table and get served the food. Now you understand that everything that was going on the whole time was just for these two people. Right? Otherwise it was just a bunch of separate things. So now you understand that if these two people show up and they eat the meal, then it made sense to mop the floor, it made sense to make the table, it made sense to prepare the food. But if the two people come and they say, oh my gosh, you know what, I'm not hungry, or I'd rather go and see a movie, so then what did I mop the floor for, what did I set the table for, what did I cook for, right? It was all a waste of time. That's what the Mishnah means. The Hashem created the world with 10 statements. He could have created it with one. He created with one, there's absolutely no hierarchy whatsoever. You don't know what's for what, there's nothing, there's no setup, there's no progression, there's no lead-in to a climax. But when Hashem created the world with 10 statements, so then it all leads towards Adam at the top. Adam at the top, that means that if he shows up, and he is what they all set up for, in other words, he's a tzaddik, he lives the human potential of Tzelem Elokim, then it all fits. But otherwise, if he's a rush, if he doesn't, then he's destroying the world. All of it was just for him, and it never came to fruition, never came to reality. This idea is that the whole world is going to be dependent on the one man. And that's a unity of purpose, which is expressed in the first Mishnah, in the sixth parak of Pirkei Avos, where it says that the person who studies Torah for its own sake, all of the world, kol ha'olam kulay kedai ulay, the whole world, would make sense just for that person. It was created just for that person. And as the Rambam writes very, very vividly in his introduction to the Pirush, to his commentary on the Mishnah, he says, you know, you could have a world and it's filled with all kinds of things and all kinds of people, and there are some chosen few who are really what it's all about. And you'll wonder, you'll drive through the country and you'll see this huge estate owned by some, whatever it is, some magnate who, I don't know, like, what's his life? What's he doing? And this is not me, this is the Rambam, right? You know, it's like he's not, but you know what it is? What happened was that one of those chosen people, one of those very, very, very special, unique people, one afternoon he was walking through the fields and he was trying to understand something, you know, what the world was about. He was trying to understand something in the Torah, right? And it was a hot day. And he said, ah, you know what, I'm going to go stand under the tree and take a little shade so I can continue thinking about that. So it could be that the reason why that fellow was so successful in developing all of his real estate and everything else and becoming and having an estate in the country was for that instant to play a role in the life of the tzaddik. Now the Rambam was a rationalist. Right? That's kind of a dramatic statement for a rationalist to say. Right? But the idea here is that you understand that it all comes to a head. It all comes to an echad. It all comes to an echad. And the echad is always higher. It's always, right, the purpose, ultimately, is that it should go higher. What happens when we go down, right? The physical death, what happens is decomposition, where that which was held together actually falls apart. Right, when we talk about the climax of Tchias HaMesim, the resurrection of the dead, is that everything which was apart comes back together and fuses and joins into one that goes higher and higher. The higher it is, like in the pyramid, the more unified it is. It comes to a point, it comes to a unified head. So when we read this Gemara over here, and we see that in this other structure of four, which is the dust, the water, the fire, the ruach, it also has this sort of ascension. Right? We don't, you know, like Domein Tzomeach Chayim Edaber, it also has this sort of ascension. And one swallows up the other. Right? One absorbs the other, one becomes a part of the other, that they build into each other to rise up. But it's a parallel track. Because here we're talking on the non-kosher side. But it all has its roots in the same tree. And Miyitein Tohar Mitameh, somehow the Tameh also can, even though in the here and now it is what it is, and it's on the outside and it's separate, it's not front and center for what's supposed to be, but ultimately it will be turned around. The Gemara says, what's the most non-kosher animal you can think of?
Chazer.
A chazer.
Kosher?
Why is a chazer called a chazer? Because in the chazer also means to return. Right? Chozer b'tshuva. Right? Right? Ultimately, the chazer will come back. The chazer is a pig. Right? But it says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to bring it back. It's going to bring it back. It's going to become a part of the whole thing. Right? And it's not going to be like this idea of separation, two separate tracks. Right? What was the ultimate two separate tracks of humanity? Yaakov and Esav. Right? Yaakov so pure, so perfect. Esav so evil, so terrible. And what's the ultimate thing? You know, you have his grandson, Rebbe, and his grandson, Antoninus. And Antoninus is just running after to see what he can do to help Rebbe, what he can do to be a part of him, how they can somehow become fused together. That's the idea. Esav is compared to the Chazir, right? The idea is that you're ultimately going to see that it's going to connect back to the root. Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. And whether it is in the description that night is going to turn into day, or weekdays are going to turn into Shabbos, or death is going to turn into life, Tchias HaMesim, Tomei is going to turn into Tohar. It all ultimately finds its place, finds its unity. That's the relationship of the things within the world. That's the study of Arayus that the Maral said that the Mishnah referred to before cryptically in Maseches Chagiga. To see that ultimately it starts at one, and therefore ultimately we'll come back to one.
Was it necessary to use such a deep encoding of this idea because it's such a deep idea and it could be misplaced and mishandled by people?
To the extent that you and I say, oh, now we understand this Gemara,
yeah.
Right? We obviously don't understand it well. If it was, if we, and I was, what we're still saying is still, you know, what is this? There's much more to it than that. But the way as the Maral is setting it up, you start to understand that the choice of a frog and a snake and a bird, right? You know, and the tree with its branches where it's coming to rest, and the 60 village house, you know, it was the 60 house village, you know, they start to take on a shape and a meaning. So we know that maybe we've seen that there's something here beyond the surface that we've barely scraped.
Oh, good.
That's what it is. So this is the idea, and we'll see how it goes in Yeretz Hashem. You know, some of the agadas which he's going to do here in the fifth are less challenging than this one, and some of them are a little bit more challenging than this one. But we'll have a good time, okay? And we'll croak our way through it.